Bernie Sanders has accused Hillary Clinton of being part of the establishment. Donald Trump said his comments about the judge handling the Trump University cases were misconstrued earlier in the day. House Speaker Paul Ryan said they were textbook racism. Well, our next guest is hearing echoes of a previous campaign. In 1968, the Southern segregationist George Wallace ran as a third-party candidate. Fights between Ku Klux Klansmen and Black Power activists broke out at his rallies. Senators Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy challenged President Lyndon Johnson for the Democratic nomination. Johnson dropped out, his escalation of the Vietnam War unbearably controversial. Kennedy was assassinated. Vice President Hubert Humphrey wins the nomination, but there's chaos at the Chicago convention. Humphrey then narrowly loses to Republican Richard Nixon, who's helped by the presence of Wallace, who got 13% of the vote. Michael Cohen writes about all of this in his new book, American Maelstrom, the 1968 Election and the Politics of Division. He joins us now. And Michael, first of all, why take this on? So much has been written about 1968.
I was really struck by just how similar sort of the narrative of 68 mimics sort of the narrative of American politics today. It felt to me like this inflection point in American politics. You know, what happened 4 years before 68? In the 64 election, Lyndon Johnson wins 61% of the popular vote, the biggest popular vote margin in American history, pushes through his Great Society agenda. It seems like we have this new era of liberal activism in the country. And then 4 years later, Democrats get 43% of the vote. I'd lose the White House, and it begins this 30-40-year period of conservative dominance, for lack of a better word, in American politics. And so sort of asking the question of what happened that year and you know, what is sort of the legacy of 68? Are we still living to some extent in the politics that came out of that year? And one thing I conclude in the book is that we are. And a lot of what we see today in American politics, the images of the two parties in particular, really came out of that election.
Huh. Well, let's remind people, you talk about he pushes through LBJ, his Great Society, Medicare for the aged, Medicaid for the poor, creates the Department of Transportation for better safety laws, the Civil Rights Act, 87 bills in 1 year and 84 are signed. Congress is behind him. The Voting Rights Act, as you write, the nail in the coffin of Jim Crow. But then you also write, by the time we're getting to 68, everyone is angry. Remind us, at who? Why?
You had this extraordinary increase in crime rate throughout the 1960s. You had riots almost every single summer from 64 on. In 67, you had Newark and Detroit. In 68, you had the riots that came after the King assassination. You, of course, had the war in Vietnam, 500,000 American troops in Vietnam. By 67, growing anger over the war, especially on the left. And then you had a larger cultural shift in the country. You know, the counterculture emerges, and you have this generational shift between, you know, kids who had come of age in the era of prosperity in the 50s and 60s and their parents who had come of age during the deprivation of the Great Depression. And they all seem to sort of come together in this 1 year. But what's also unusual is the number of political actors. I mean, you look at it, Richard Nixon, Lyndon Johnson, Hubert Humphrey, Bobby Kennedy, Gene McCarthy, Reagan, Rockefeller, Romney, George Wallace. I mean, these are the men who basically defined American politics the second half of the 20th century.
Yeah, we thought we had a crowded field,
right.
You know. But just to back up a second, when I was reading it, I was thinking all those things he pushed through, that's sort of how some people are reacting to President Obama pushing through even just health care. You have the terrible race relations. We're still seeing lynching at this point. We still have terrible race problems now, as headlines from the past year have shown. But that other sense has maybe been transferred to Mexican immigrants. What lines do you see? Where do you see some of the lines?
Well, it's certainly true that the other big social and cultural cleavage in 68 was along racial lines. And there's no question that the white backlash, which had been sort of simmering for quite a few years, really emerged in 68. There was a perception that wasn't really accurate, but there was a perception that Johnson and the Democrats were more focused on helping blacks, helping poor people, than they were in helping the middle class.
Well, it wasn't at all accurate when you look at all those programs we just listed that helped everybody.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question that disproportionately white Americans benefited. But there's a certain reality here that the changes that came about because of the civil rights movement, because of some of the anti-poverty programs, meant that you had blacks moving into white neighborhoods. You had, in 68, you had housing reform that basically ended housing discrimination. So all of a sudden, you know, civil rights movement, it may seem something people support, but by 68, you see people actually beginning to experience it directly in their lives. And so a lot of what you see in 68, especially with the support for Wallace, is whites who begin to view the Democratic Party, who they many traditionally supported, as somehow working against their interests. Very much you see that same thing today, where people who are economically anxious about their jobs or their wages or their health care. They feel anxious. And there's somebody who comes up, somebody like Trump, who basically scapegoats immigrants and scapegoats poor people and scapegoats minorities. And very much the same way that Wallace did it in the 60s with poor blacks.
Wallace was the third party candidate. Talk more about how you see the two major parties germinating something in 68 that we're seeing now.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, to some extent, the Republicans, you see Richard Nixon running somewhat in the middle of two polar opposites, Nelson Rockefeller on the left and Ronald Reagan on the right. But what you see here very much, especially with the support for Reagan, who was much more to the right even of Nixon, is this new sort of angry anti-government kind of a language coming out of the right that is very much geared around opposing Johnson's Great Society agenda. And so you see this sort of tug of war in the Republican Party, and you see Nixon sort of in the middle, but leaning very much to the right. On the Democratic side, yeah, it's much more about Vietnam. And it primarily comes from, you know, Gene McCarthy, who announces his campaign in the fall of 67 against Johnson, challenges him over the war, almost defeats him in New Hampshire primary. Bobby Kennedy comes in a week later, and within 2 weeks, Johnson dropped out of the race. Yeah. And Vietnam becomes the issue that really defines the Democratic race between March of 68 and the convention in August.
And we've had endless conversations about how it came to define the party, which was
absolutely
said for years to not be able to handle security.
Right.
And, you know, ask you a couple of things that you think people should know, because some of it has been caricatured. For instance, Democratic Senator Eugene McCarthy, who challenges Johnson, an anti-war candidate. But you say much more than that.
Gene McCarthy really energized the anti-war wing of the party. Even after Kennedy got in the race, the anti-war activists stayed with McCarthy by and large. He was also much more liberal than Kennedy. Kennedy was sort of maybe the first example you can think of a third-way Democrat who talked about creating this black, blue-collar coalition. In a sense, he was sort of way ahead of his time. McCarthy's insurgency against Johnson ends up not only toppling Johnson from and forcing him from the race, but it really, I think, creates this avenue for liberal activists to begin to play a more active role in the party. So McCarthy's influence really is, I think, pretty significant, very underestimated.
Well, is it also something that you can trace from 68 to 2016?
Yeah, I think every year sort of since 68, you've had this kind of anti-establishment element. You see it right now with Bernie Sanders. I think there is, it's not a direct link, but certainly there is an indirect link between someone like McCarthy and Bernie Sanders and the suspicion of the party establishment, which in 68 was pervasive because of Johnson, because of his lack of candor about the war, and because of, in many ways, his distance from the younger sort of anti-war activists and counterculture activists.
How do we see Donald Trump?
I mean, Donald Trump is George Wallace. And I mean,
that's, you know, George Wallace was a racist.
Well, I mean, you could say the same thing about Donald Trump, certainly. I mean, people liked about Wallace and like about Trump is they say what, you know, things that are politically incorrect. They say whatever they want to say. Wallace's wife once said about George that you know, people see him on TV and they all meet the press and say, that's what I would say if I was on TV. And
well,
we hear that a lot from Trump.
And remind us,
as well,
just so, you know, people, what are some of the things Wallace said?
You know, the thing with interesting about Wallace is that he was a New Deal Democrat. He ran that campaign in 68 primarily on racial issues, but on an anti-government agenda. But not anti-government the way we think of it today. Anti-government really towards civil rights, the Supreme Court. But the idea that the government had a responsibility to, you know, spend money on Social Security and Medicare and public education, Wallace supported all those things. And in some ways, that's actually kind of similar to the way Trump is, because Trump doesn't really follow the conservative orthodoxy. And in fact, he's hated by a lot of conservatives, just as Wallace was in 68. But what both of them really have in common is I think they understood how to play on this sense of white anxiety and white fear, but to tie that fear of the other to their economic anxiety. And in 68, it was also about crime. And crime, in my view, was the number one issue in 68, even more so than Vietnam. You know, the same way that Wallace talked about crime, Trump talks about immigration. They aren't the same because crime was a really serious issue in 68. Immigration is not a serious issue as Trump portrays it today. But it's that same idea of playing on that kind of fear. A lot of Republicans ended up adopting Wallace's rhetoric. Wallace's appeal really became synonymous with the Republican Party. And I think to a large extent, that's why Trump is doing as well as he has done, because he is, in a sense, George Wallace 48 years later.
And that's the opinion of Michael Cohen. His new book is American Maelstrom, the 1968 Election and the Politics of Division. Michael, thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And you can read an excerpt at herenow.org where you can weigh in. Did 68 shape today's election? Are you sick of hearing about 1968? Wallace? Trump? Your thoughts? Let us know.